Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. Tonight we have a very special treat. I'm here with a young man that I've known for some time. He hails from Portland, Oregon. His name is Octaviano Mauricio Cuevas. He is a spoken word artist. He's a visual storyteller and a trilingual writer. He has presented and published his works in Mexico and the United States. He writes in Mixteco, Spanish, and English about contemporary issues that affect and shape Latino, Chicano, Hispanic, the indigenous experience in the United States. Octaviano, are you there?
I am here, Dr. Ingram. Thank you very much for inviting me to join you tonight.
Yes, very, very nice. Again, I've known you for some time. Like I said, again, you're an incredible person, and I wanted people to know that you're an excellent writer as well. Do you think you were meant to be a writer?
Let me get started by acknowledging that we are on the land of the first people, the Native Americans. I am speaking to you from the land of the Calapuyas, the Warm Springs, the Huasco, the North Paiutes. With their permission and the permission of all the spirits, allow me to begin. I think I became a writer accidentally. I think now I realize that I'm meant to be a writer. If you asked me that 10 years ago, I would probably say no. But after a lot of reflections, I think I came to the firm and solid conclusion that I meant to be a writer.
Why is that?
First of all, let me start with the prison time stories when my dad was incarcerated. He couldn't speak Spanish very well. He never went to school. He didn't know how to write and read. He now knows how to write and read, learn as an adult. But I saw how they took away his lands, his place, and his house, and how people humiliated him because he didn't know how to write or read, and he's the most gentle and kind soul. And one time, for him to wait for people to arrive from the capital, they say, "We are going to put you in this holding cell until the person that is fighting to take your lands away arrive here." And he was there, and I was thinking, when I grow up, I want to learn how to write and read so I can help my dad. But then that was just the moment in the beginning, right? After I moved to the United States at the age of 17, I realized that the mission is even bigger. I have to learn how to write and read the young souls that also need to hear the story, but also for the people around the world that are hungry for learning and at the same time can connect with me through my writings and through my readings, but mostly through my thoughts materializing to writings. Of course, there's much more, but one planted seed by observing the need to write, it helped me and it pushed me into these moments of creating, putting all my thoughts into writing in three languages.
Well, what I'd like you to do is to share a piece of your poetry.
Let me get started with something, Dr. Ingram, the mathematics of time. Plant a seed of seconds and cherish it. Nourish it. Watch, it will grow to become a minute. It will slowly start blooming to become an hour. And it will run and fly like a wild, youthful day. So much innocence and curiosity we harvest today. De cuyayo, inyo, anyo. At the end of the sunset, a fertile young day will marriage the gorgeous night to salute the moon. Under seven stars, they'll unite to become a week, a middle-aged light shining with strength. The month of your hopes will dream, deeper than the meditation of fall, brighter than the beauty of spring, mighter than the fertile sounds of summer, and stronger than the spirits of winter, until it unfolds its pages like a yearbook. This slow song of one decade, this witness of wisdom, this disciple of experience, this old growth tree of life before your eyes will engrave each memory in the stone of a century. Lu usha hitoyo, in hin inyo, plants another seed of second and cherish it, nourish it. The century of your legacy cannot survive without the seeds of your seconds.
That was very powerful. Tell me about the inspiration for that particular piece.
It's essential to live the now, to be mindful, to be present, with the understanding that what we create, what we do now, has actions, has repercussions. I was working with young people, youth at risk, they call them, but I call them youth at the beginning of an opportunity. And it was an after-school program, and a lot of young people were just getting into trouble, you know, family issues, poverty, crime, and neighborhoods. And so I say, let's do this. Let's engage in this concept that is called mindful meditation. Everybody laughed. I laughed too. And I say, let's put our thoughts into something, right? Let's stop for 5 minutes, meditate, and come back and write or draw or paint or sing or dance, whatever comes to mind. And that's when I started writing. And I started putting the mathematics of time, that each 1 second becomes a minute, becomes an hour, becomes a week, becomes a month, becomes a year. So what we do with this positivity can have consequences in the future.
Yes. Tell us about the Mixteco culture.
Mixteco, it's in Spanish. The Aztecs gave it that name. Mixtecapan, but we know, we speak in our ancient language, we're known as the New Sabi. New means land, Sa'u or Sabi, it's rain, so we're known as the people of the clouds, the clouds people, or the people of the rain, and so on. We were thousands of years in existence before Mexico was even born. We are people of the Calmecac region, which is all of this Western Hemisphere, the native, ancient native language we know as the Anahuac. So we used to walk across, I don't know, history and legends say that we used to walk all the way to the northern parts, and maybe in the past we shook hands with the Hopi, with the Navajo, with the Comanche, with the Apaches. So the borders were not in existence when we were moving freely a long time ago. We are from the southern part of Mexico and the state of Guerrero and Puebla. That's a whole Mixteca region. But my language and my people are from the southern mountains of Mexico.
That's beautiful.
That's the Mixtec. In Oregon, there's close to about 10,000 Mixtecos. Not official estimates, but we are all across the Western Hemisphere. And that's why I say I am native. I'm indígena, new Sa'u, before saying I'm Latino or Hispanic or Mexican.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Share another piece of your work.
Borders, Dr. Ingram, are a topic of a conversation, sometimes difficult, sometimes delicate, and sometimes controversial. Let me read a piece that I dedicate to a person who screamed at me in front of my house about immigrants, about illegal immigrants, he said. It was frightening, but my response had to be more mindful, more meditative, more prefrontal cortex-y. So let me read this. It's just in a point of questions and reflections for the European descent, the Caucasian brothers and sisters who live in this North American territory. Okay? Let me start with this. Have you forgotten the chilling cold that wrapped itself in the pilgrimage of your bones and ate away the heritage of commemoration and land? Have you disregarded the nebulous debt lingering the Mayflower's nests under the North Star, afloat the merciless ocean, so far away from home? So close to not? Have you neglected the song of the Alps, the Gaelic reach, the harmony of the grass in the distant land, island dancing with the fiddle? Have you disregarded the serendipity of dreams, the splashing mirrors of languages and culture, melodies of hopes, moving the rhythm of your feet forward? Have you forgotten the dark fear, the stalk, the rows of ghettos, and the frozen surface of a street in Plymouth, corner to chant in prayers of mother tongues in circles of Yankees, Palatines, Swedes, Finns, the circle always incomplete, always waiting for one more? Have you forgotten those who were turned back to the sea, shipped in chains to the extremity of the oceans, expelled to the purgatory of our consciousness? Maybe it was your elder. Maybe it's one of us reviving in faith. Have you forgotten the agonizing ritual of leaving behind those who became stars in search of something better, a fresh start, a second chance, the last chance to be alive? Perhaps we're all resident aliens, oscillating between worlds, collapsing into the inevitable one transforming synchronized pulsations of one organism, vibrating in symphony of interconnectedness as a transfusion of harmony, resisting the wisdom of kindness.
What is, again, I know that you travel as a motivational speaker as well, and that's quite evident. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice? What do you try to do?
I have an accent. probably you haven't noticed it.
Okay.
No, I've never picked it up.
Dr. Ingram, if I tell you I have not spoken with my grandma who taught me Mixteco Mixtec for 20 years, so my accent in Mixtec is the accent of the immigrant who went norte to the USA.
Yes.
My Spanish is the Spanish of the working class, farm workers, factory workers, cannery workers, you know, construction workers. You know, my dad never went to school. My mom went to second grade. So they only taught me the Spanish that they learned as their second language. My English, of course, is the English with the immigrant flavor. So my projection, my tone, my phonetics, I have to speak with the slow pace in certain circles. And in other places, I have to speak with sort of fast pace. Happen, let's do it, you can do it, raise your standards, conquer your limiting beliefs, let's do it, let's make it happen, right? So I think my voice, my projection, it morphs, it shapes, it adapts to the situation, just like I had physically adapt to situations in places where I'm talking to, you know, colleagues in a professional setting, or when I'm, you know, in grad school right now at Johns Hopkins, my presentation mode is different. When I'm speaking with my barrio friends, when I go back to visit familia, you know, I speak mi español the mountains, you know. It's my identity is fluid, just like my parts. And my consciousness is fluid, just like the process of neuroplasticity. The more info I add, the different then my brain slowly is being shaped. So that's why I think it's contextual. It's adaptable.
Well, in the African-American community, it's called code switching, where you switch up in the environment
exactly.
that you're in. You know,
exactly.
And it's primarily based on survival. It's survival.
Oh,
survival technique.
Exactly, exactly. I think, and you know that, Dr. Ingram, that for us, as I have to be very conscious of the social dynamics in the United States,
yes.
being a man of color, for sure. I cannot be just raise my voice in a meeting because immediately you know the process of unconscious bias, right? In a fraction of a second, I can just be categorized as a threatening person or as a, you know, a super charming person. So I have to be also very mindful, and I'm sure a lot of men of color have to be very mindful. And I let me tell you about my experience of with the police departments and the sheriff's department. My very first experience, the first week here in the U.S., someone called the police on me and my best friend, and we had to defend ourselves using our very limited English. But we have to do it very quietly because, yeah, they were coming to arrest us. And anything that you scream, chances are they will, you know, slap you
arrest.
Or shoot you or something, right? Or worse.
Yes. 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 I can understand that. I can understand that. Now, I know that you work also in terms of brain, the mind-brain. Your master's degree, or you work on your professor's degree in mind-brain training. Am I correct?
Johns Hopkins has this superb program. It's called the Mind-Brain and Teaching Program. And basically, as an educator, as a learning and development professional, I have to learn how people learn, but we have to look at the neuroscience, the process of memory consolidation. How do we create the social emotional space for people to feel complete, holy, and present, and to absorb as much information? But at the same time, is how do we create and deliver the content in a way that people really will capture and connect with it, right? Whether it has to do the tone of voice, whether it has to do the visuals, the space, the smells, the foods, everything. So I want to approach this a subject of teaching in a more comprehensive manner, in a more holistic manner. And therefore, I have to go back to the basics and look at the latest neuroscience. What is it telling us about how does a young person that, learn knowing and understanding that we have some frameworks, for example, trauma-informed frameworks for teaching and learning, or a healing engagement processes of learning and teaching. But at the same time, what's going on in the brain of the teacher, the content deliverer, the presenter, the lecturer, the professor? It is essential to bring those two aspects into the conversation. If teaching is an art, so it should be the learning process.
All right. Well, let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Dr. Ingram.
Yes. Talented artist. He is a visual storyteller. What is a visual storyteller? Tell us more about that.
A visual storyteller. How I do my presentations, Dr. Ingram, is I incorporate photography. Photography, if you want to sort of look at some of the work that I have, is mixtecan.com, mixtecan.com, and there you have my bio, but there's a link there that it's called digital storytelling or digital or something. Just click on it and you will see three main galleries that I have created for this presentation. One is day, the other one is the evening, and another one is the night. And the reason why I sort of present photography with writing, it's because as humans, we of course have to incorporate all of our senses into the learning process. So for me, a one thing is describing the situation to the writing, and another thing is having or displaying that image that it goes along with the writing piece. And I'm adding also music, sometimes live music, sometimes not. But I try to add as many elements that can make the presence felt and that can engage the person's observing and experience with all the different senses. So sometimes I bring in smell, copal, or some kind of an incense or something. So a visual storyteller is a person that utilizes the digital technology to either share the story, to tell the story, to elevate the story, to upbring the story, to raise awareness through the storytelling, right? So, for example, the social political commentaries about immigration, sometimes I display some of my photographs, sometimes I borrow photographs of someone and I give them credit, of course, and then I tell the story. The story has to connect with the viewer, because I respect different opinions and different ways of looking at the situation, and I have to be mindful that this to make a better connection, rather than just showing facts and figures, which are essentially and are important, also the human connection, the storytelling is essential, and it's part of our indigenous culture. They have a flower and song, or flor y canto, where basically we are telling the story to connect, to heal, to unify, through a poetic means.
All right, and that's my next question. Speaking of writing, how is poetry like photographs? How would you look at the two? How would you interpret the two?
Poetry
or
heals.
Spoken word.
Poetry and spoken word heals and unifies. Photograph the same thing. Both of them tell of an experience, and both of them gives the medicine, gives the senses, some kind of a neuronal activity that people then say, right? One example is, for example, if you look at my images, right, none of them have people in it because I want the person to be there and to connect and to make them their story, their journey, just by connecting with the piece. And the same thing is with my writings. In a lot of them, I ask questions, right? And it's because I want people to connect, to see themselves, to own it. I don't think I write for myself or to keep it or to, like, you know, print it and frame it and staring at it. I write for the people. The people owns my work. And the people take it and the people use it. The people use it for healing, for unifying. I write for that purpose. So therefore, that's where I see a strong connection between photography and the writing. Both of them are tools for healing, unifying, raising awareness, and then engaging consciousness.
All right. Well, please share with us another of your works.
Allow me to read something in Spanish, if that's okay, Dr. Ingram.
Oh, yes, yes, it's perfect.
One of my very first writings. This is the offering that I have to poesía, to poetry, my offering. Te doy mi bosque escupiendo versos en cicatrices de poesía de hambre y desierto. Te doy un árbol de humillación y respeto. Te doy mis sueños en llamaradas. Te doy mis pies con huellas de desierto. Te doy mi voz coqueta, mi voz tranquila, mi voz salina, mi voz derritiéndose entre el grito y la meditación. Te doy un ala rota, mitad batalla, mitad primavera. Te doy sinceridad de alfiler, sonrisas de medicina, mirada que abraza. Te doy esta miseria sin mentiras, mi mano adolorida sin confianza, mis cadenas, las que tú sabes en tu espejo. Te doy mi arco iris sin pasaporte y horizonte con luna y sol colapsados. Te doy el frío melancólico de un lápiz, el canto de aguardiente y compadres con sombreros y alas negras. Te doy lo poco que queda de mi alma partida en tres, una ventana, viento, lluvias de música, una flor brotando en sensación, una cascada de fuego lento y llanto en poesía. Te doy poesía, memorias encontradas en hojas de viento gris. Te doy mi yo enrollado en tinta de alma y lápiz sin razón. Te doy mis respetos de intimidades francas, de versos secretos. Te doy mi pausa sin llaves ni candados, solo párrafos de sueños palpitando realidades. Te doy lo poco que tengo, que es mi poesía.
Will you share in English?
I do not have the translation of that piece in English. Do you mind if I just make a summary?
Yes, please, please. It's beautiful. Yes.
In English would be, what do I offer to poetry? If poetry was a tree or a god or an energy or a something, right? Or a quantum dynamic, not yet understood energy. I will give my nostalgia, my sadness, my happiness, my joy, my deep core feelings, to the bones feelings, my everything, my sincerity, my shame, my great deep passion of literature and creative stuff, my brokenness, my imperfections, my pieces of stories and experiences that I have faced. And I think that was the thinking behind it, if I were to give my offerings. And the offering, of course, translates into what do I give to the public, to the people, to the listener, to the observer, to the absorber.
Well, it leads me to another question. How do you believe, how do you think, how is your conceptualization of poetry changed since the beginning of the time when you started writing? What's changed about your work?
When I first started, I wrote and I never spoke in front of people because that was terrifying for me. In high school, they put me to read a book in front of everyone. It was my first month, I think, in this country. So imagine you go to a foreign country and you have never spoken the language, and next thing you know is you are reading in front of 27 different high schoolers, and you don't even know what the symbols mean. So you start reading and everybody laughs at you, and you just feel like you are that you are a complete failure, and you just want to just basically disappear from the face of the earth and never speak in public again. So I took a long break, never to speak in front of a public and always to face the consequences of getting a bad grade because I skipped the public presentation part. So my writing one time, it was the Black Poets Society at Oregon State University, right? You remember that time, and I think they had those open mics, I think, you know, slam poetry, the time of the slammers, you know, slamming drinks, slamming poetry, slamming writings, literature, right? So the thing is, I one time showed up crudo, hangover, I think, at one of the events, okay? I won't get deeper into that conversation, but there was people reading these very metric, these mathematic ways of poetry. There were others that were reading these, you know, Dickens, these Shakespeare type of poetry. There were others reading these more like spoken word, like a mix of something. And there were others reading the hip hop, the, you know, Tupac Shakur. Run DMC, the word, the microphone, the tempo, the rhythm, the let's make it happen. So that's when I say, wow, there is a lot, and there is a lot of creativity, and there's a lot of healing, there's a lot of unleashing, there's a lot of creation in this. So that's when I started. First, I started with free verse. I never took a class in poetry, like, and I just started doing free verse, just whatever comes to my mind, just say it. It did not have structure or, you know, a rhyme or simile. I mean, it was just writing. And through that process, slowly I started moving into understanding the other types of writing, the Florencanto, the indigenous poetry, or the corridos, the octasyllabic type of poetry. Or how did, you know, Mario Benedetti from South America wrote poetry? How did Octavio Paz wrote with this complex and very difficult to understand words, but for me it wasn't accessible. Some writers, I mean, it's not accessible for my sort of limited understanding of specific languages, right? So I say, how do I create, how do I tell the story using what I have, the limited vocabulary, but in a way they can connect, and in a way that I cannot say, you know, I want to write something. Instead, I will say, from my fingers, you know, rivers of voices come out, right? How do I say, I worked in the farms in Cornelius, Oregon. How do I say, from this rose, hope green appears, or something, you know what I mean? So I was thinking, I want to add this layer to the process of writing, but at the same time, I want to get involved and start discovering and getting, just like a carpenter, right, has to understand the tree, how the tree grows, how the tree is planted, and what type of wood, how does the wood smells, you know, what kind of like little imperfection does the wood have, what is the wood will be created for, what is the final product will be, would it be a bed, would it be a, you know, a desk, would it be a stick, would it be a piece of a weapon, you know. I think that's what my journey went from just free writing prose into a more structured, into a more thoughtful, into a more strategic way of writing.
Do you miss the freestyle of poetry? Do you feel confined or restrained at all?
I feel I don't miss it because I write it still, but I don't read it. I don't share it. I feel constrained by, one, my professional endeavors, my professional journey, right? And two, I feel constrained by the expectations, you know, that a society, in a sense, has of the writer, and also in times where, you know, there's different ways that we share with the public, and there's different ways that you share with very intimate friends, and there's different ways that you share with, you know, people that you don't know. So those are very important things, right? I mean, we're not in the time where Charles Bukowski, for example, was just sharing a lot of things, you know, very open and very, you know, gruesome, or we're not in a time where, you know, the great Jim Morrison used to write and share these other things, where, you know, I think where the times have changed, but also the digital era is demanding, and also the digital era and the physical era, it's demanding ways of how do we communicate different things. And for me, there are certain limitations, of course, but also there's a great opportunity to write.
You know, we're having this conversation, and so much is happening in the world, on the border. What do you think is the role of a poet or a spoken word artist in modern day society? What's the role? What's the role? What role should we play?
I think I can tell you that as a someone has to say something, right? Someone has to they say that if you don't take a position, you are on the side of the oppressor. And if we know throughout time, throughout history, the writer, the playwright, the musician always stood on the side of justice or the just cause. And I think in this time where borders are pretty new stuff here in the Western Hemisphere, right, the poet, the writer has the responsibility, from my perspective, I see it that way, the responsibility to, one, say, be there, risk, say it. It might be controversial, it might be delicate, it might be uncomfortable, but people that are on the side of the victims, people that are oppressed, are waiting for those that have a microphone, a pen and paper, those that have the stage to say, to tell that humanity is about healing and unifying. And we know that after the storms, things come to calm. And we have seen this, right? During the Franco era, for example, in Spain, a lot of good poetry came out of that. During the, Civil War, even here in the U.S., during the times of, you know, where our African American brothers and sisters were moving to the north and were being, they still are. The songs and the most beautiful writings came out of that. The most beautiful songs of resistance came. I see it as the responsibility of the writer to use their skills, their talents, their observations to stay on the side of justice, humanity, healing, and unifying.
It's beautiful. And you're absolutely right. Humanity needs poets. We need to have opportunities
exactly.
To lift our voice and share it whether it is controversial or not. We need to be truth-sayers. Let's take a brief break. Well, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back. All right, hold on 1 second here. Good evening. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. If you'd like to call in and speak with Octaviano, please, the number is 646-787-1631. He's an exciting young man. He's an incredible poet. He's an incredible linguist. He's just incredible all the way around. So will you favor us with another one of your pieces, please?
I will, Dr. Ingram. And I this is dedicated to our veterans, either war or any other walks of life. And I wrote this just in a meditative form, but also in a form of how do we connect as humans with each other, regardless of different perspectives and ways that we see the world.
Yes.
The man came from the war with his tired feet and his hungry belly. He laid his boots outside. He laid his soul inside. Next to the chickens, next to the sheep, he laid his hand over the corderito, the lamb. He laid his heart inside the barn. With his hair falling to the ground like tears before awakening the sun, like sorrows adormitando to sleep with the stars. The man came from the way. On the first day of the Lord, Mom cooked the chicken soup, and we sat there and watched a man becoming a boy, afraid of himself, afraid of his past. Mom made a pot of herbal tea, and we sat there and listened, a boy becoming a baby, looking for his cuna, looking for his inner peace. And Mom made the bed. We sat there and watched the baby becoming a dream, dreaming to reach the heaven, dreaming to live one more day. And Mom lighted a candle, and we sat there and watched Mom praying for her son on the day of the Lord when the war came home.
Exquisite. Tell us more about the genesis of that piece. Why veterans?
I work a lot with veterans from the war. Afghanistan. I have a friend who almost committed suicide, I don't know how many times. And also alcoholism took a big toll. I have a lot of other friends who are, deep into the depression, anxiety moments. I see it as one, as a friend, I can listen, all right? Those of us who have been in the war zone, those of us who have experienced extreme violence, especially the mountains, we can tell you the terrorism, the state terror-sponsored terrorism in our regions of Latin America, it brings a lot of anger out of young men, not young people, right? We can see it how the gangs were established, in California after the war, civil war in Central America, right? We can see how a young person that comes out of prison, doesn't find a job, cannot get health care, comes home and cannot find, economic means, sustainability. So they get mad, they get angry, get involved in different things, and they end up in prison. There's that process. So it's important for us to analyze, right, the deep pain that people have, but also the incredible journey of healing that they can find by just connecting with others. And for us to connect with that is for us to observe and to look at the world from their perspective. So that perspective taking piece is essential. And that's where I was thinking, right? When I wrote this piece, I was imagining a man coming into a house And are we going to welcome a person? Are we going to cook some soup and let them sleep either in the barn or inside a place? And are we going to watch them going from a grown man of the war into a baby, into a light, into a tender, lingering pain, or a tender, lingering soul flourishing?
Wow. Now, when you write, what types of poems do you find yourself writing most? Do you have a recurring type? I mean, you've been very varied tonight. Do you have a recurring type of poetry that you like to write?
I like to think about I call myself a writer that writes from the perspective of a healing center engagement, meaning that if my piece doesn't motivate, doesn't heal, doesn't ask questions, doesn't raise that awareness, then I'm just writing in a way that I didn't put so much thought into it. So for me, it becomes one, there's a story inside. Two, there are at least three different elements. And four, it's a message that someone will pick it up and carry it. And another thing is that people will read, every time you read my piece, you will find something new. So that's why I don't explain much of it. For some people, it might be very difficult at the beginning to read. Like, what is this guy talking about? What do you mean, like, you know, reach like harvesting hands in every single blade of grass? What does that even mean, you know? But but I think after you read it for a while, and then the title is very important. For me, I don't immediately write those octasyllabic, like very structured poems first, right? I don't think into the rhyme or so on. What I do is I just do free write, like a short story. And then from there, I just shape it into a structure. I just break it down into paragraphs. And then from there, if I go deeper, I just start taking them out and I start adding rhythm to it. So in a sense, it can be a rhythm of a drum, a rhythm of a waterfall, I'm sorry, or just a simple hum rhythm, like, you know, just a spoken word, the marching, the walking, the heartbeat, and so on. So it is multiple. It's contextual too.
What conditions help you write? Where do you need to be?
Coffee shop, Saturday morning, 7 o'clock. After 3 sips of coffee, then I have nothing else to worry about that day. Maybe the day hasn't even started, and I'm just sitting there with like a notebook, and I don't write in a sense of writing. What I do is I create mind maps. And mind maps, it's one of the brain-targeted sort of teachings that I've read a long time. I came across a long time ago when I was working with young people that had some trouble in concentrating. I say, all right, instead of writing like, you know, a horizontal, you know, very, very symmetrical, do a mind map. Just start drawing stuff, you know, just create a little subject here and do a little arrow and then point it. And then you will see, just like our neurons and how synapses are created, they are not, you know, just square or lined up. They happen all over the place in a little sort of like cloud form. And so I do that. I start with the mind map, and then from there I translate it into writing, typing it into the computer. I bought an old typewriter, which I'm experimenting in typing, and the reason why is because it helps me sort of organize my thoughts and start typing. But again, I'm not that disciplined yet, so I haven't put the little technique of start writing it on by hand and putting it by a typewriter and then translate it into the computer. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Right. All great writers have writing influences, and you may have mentioned a number of them, but who are some of your influences and what makes them great in your eyes?
There's too many to mention, but I think I will probably start with a book. It's called From Hip Hop to Totems, or From Totems to Hip Hop. I don't know if you've heard of that book. It's a book that basically has from Totems to Hip Hop. It's a multicultural anthology of poetry across the U.S. and the world. And what happens with this is that it has an amazing collection, and it was edited by Ishmael Reed.
Yes.
And it has writings, you know, all the way from Hemingway to, like, you know, Bessie Smith to Askisha Touré to Rick Pian to Gertrude Stein to, you know, all these great writers. And it has, you know, hip-hop. It has Native writers. It has, you know, the African diaspora. It has the Chicano writers, Francisco X. Alarcón, you know. And I think my indigenous, my African-American, my Chicano, my, you know, Irish, Italian immigrants, writers that come from, you know, the abajo, from you know, the from the barrio, from the pueblo, from the gutter, from the ghetto. Those writings are the ones that inspire me. Why? Because I connect with it. It's my experience. It's what I know. It's what I feel the stronger and rapid connection. Yeah.
Please share another of your works. This is fascinating. Please share another of your works.
How much time do I have, Dr. Gibb? I mean, Dr. Ingram, sorry. Just gonna. How much time do I have here?
We've got about another 8 minutes before we'll need to end.
Okay.
So you have time.
I don't want people to leave this radio station thinking thinking that this guy only writes controversial pieces and political charts.
And
let me write something.
Let me say something. If that was the case, it's still okay. It's still okay. People share their own different unique lived experiences. It's still okay. This world is big enough for all of us. So read and share whatever you like, whether it's controversial or not. It's still okay. All right.
This is our presence. Let me start with the Mixteco. Nakari in tun hinaro, nyaniro, nyaniri, chisori, nyaluli chaluli tatanyuna na nyu chinyua, sante iniro ichinyu maju chinyua te sante iniri ichija, mantukuyani ini ichinyua chininchayo inyu majo, sante iniyu anyuni, Sante iniri anyuri ichija. Meditari, rich, like harvesting hands in every single blade of grass as they reach to the heavens to touch the moon in times when everything seems impossible to forget, to leave behind, to say goodbye. Reach until there's nothing more than your feet on the ground and your hands squeezing a star. Love, like opening your hands and unleashing galaxies of welcoming whispers in every concentration camp of your sorrows, turning every grief into candles, transforming every night into a recital of lights, like lifting your fingers and cuddling the clouds before the sunset finds you along, running for nothing more than your last piece of hope. Let your corazón, heart, grow ears, listening. Dance. Like singing, and let every step and note fly like butterflies looking for a cocoon to comfort. Along the canyon of your troubles, along the echoes of your hope, along the forest of your imagination, next to nothing more than your present. Sing like heart beating of the drumstick that grow wings every time we hear the prayer below the waterfall, waiting for the summon to come back, and once, just once, the galaxy of the mind will stand still to show us what peace feels like. Pray, pray. Like turning light into water and pouring every single drop of song inside your skin, from your hand to your mind, from your mind to your brain, from your brain to your soul, and from the feathers of your past to the sky of your present, awaiting the great spirit. Sa ante iniro chinua a chirihina ro te sa ante niri chija nakari intu un hinaro intu un kwachi a chiyo intu un hincha haskwa tutu I chija ana kuta ushani kuta usharo hinaro.
You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from your work? What emerges from Octaviano when you share, when you write? What emerges from you?
I think you have to ask people. I think depending. Mm-hmm. For me, when you say emerges, meaning... I frame the question differently, so in that way I can respond to you, because my trilingual brain is trilingual.
Right, I do understand. Okay, I understand. What emanates from your system?
Song, flower, mindfulness, healing, connection. Is presence. That's what comes to mind.
Yes, very much so. I can understand that. I agree. The whole mindfulness concept is huge in today's culture and time. You know, from a dialectical perspective, we live in a world where there needs to be an opportunity to breathe. People don't always take that opportunity to breathe. And I believe that you can breathe through poetry. That's one way,
exactly.
way to find a sense of peace, a sense of encouragement, a sense of support, is being able to breathe through the power of poetry.
Exactly. Professor Daniel Kahneman wrote the book. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. And every time we're engaging into any type of a decision-making, we have our slow brain and our fast brain. He calls it the system of one and the system of two thinking. System of one meaning the limbic system, and system of two, the prefrontal cortex. So when we meditate, the prefrontal cortex gets engaged. The activity happens in that area in the frontal lobe. There's another professor who is doing a lot of research on Andrew Newberg is his name. He's doing a lot of research on people who meditate. And literally your brain changes physically. Now, the reason why I talk about mindfulness, not in the sense of like yoga, you know, spend $5,000 to meditate, more about a simple process of metacognition, meaning chillax, take a pause. You're mad? It's okay to be mad, but it's not okay to be mean. Sit down, write something, sing, cry, be yourself. Let freedom vibrate to your blood, so in that way you can be present, because otherwise you're harming yourself. Cortisol release is not healthy. And the reason why I'm telling this is because if you know me, when I was young, I was not peaceful at all. I was completely opposite of peaceful, most people will argue. And so for me, this journey of poetry is the journey of learning to chillax, calm down, be present.
You know, you are extremely powerful, and I can understand why your career is taking off and exploding. You're a powerful poet. You're a powerful man, and I'm glad that I can call you my friend.
My mentor. I don't know if I can call you my friend. I probably will still call you my mentor, but if you allow me that authority to decide that I can be your friend too, then I will be your friend.
All right, thank you. You can be my friend. I want to thank you for enlightening all of us with your wonderful work, with just the power of your voice. The way you recite is just incredible, and thank you very much. And I'd like you to return in 2019.
Let us do it again in 2019. Thank you very much, Dr. Ingram.
All right. Have a great evening. All right. Good night, everyone.